Blog Talk Radio.
You all, but being a Southern girl, whenever I hear that part, I always think of the church. Like my great-grandfather, when they'd play this beat, this particular beat, in church, in the church band, that was when the old ladies got up and they started clapping and running around the church. Yeah, Southern girl.
Oh, all right.
The ones with the really big hats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those big hats. Those are not cute people.
I love them. They're like the fashion fad in the UK, the big hats and fascinators. I love them, but it's not good for Southern weather, especially in Alabama. My family's from Alabama. But, yeah, they would get up and they'd run around the church, and you have these ladies, they're immaculately dressed. They got on their hose and heels, and they're just running around the church just clapping, and I'm like, oh, my God. This is like a show every Sunday. This is hot.
I'll let you have that.
My family is from the backwoods of Alabama. They're used to be God-fearing people. I'm not so much anymore. but yeah, my grandmother's father, every Sunday, they would start singing something and this particular beat would come up. So you thought dubstep was new, didn't you? There's a reason why I like it.
I did.
Nope. They'd play that and run around the church. And of course, church lasts like 6 hours. Those of you from the South know. You go to church, you're going to be there all day. And that's the morning service. You got to come back for the evening. And then I would always pretend like I was asleep so I didn't have to go back in the evening. Your whole Sunday was gone.
Yeah, it was, totally.
Also, at my great-grandfather's house, you were not allowed to listen to any other music except for church music, as he called it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a town like that, man. Oh.
All day Sunday. This is the Lord's Day. You're going to listen to church music. Don't you dance at the table. Don't you sing. Bow your head, put your hands in your lap.
See, it wouldn't have been such a bad thing for me because, I mean, I didn't really, one time I didn't really care. But in this town that I grew up, it was a little bitty town. There was only one stop, it wasn't even a stoplight. It was a blinking yellow light.
Oh, I love it.
We had one stop sign.
I love them.
It's how small it was. We had a little bitty mom and pop grocery, all that fun stuff. That's it. The school encompassed everybody. So from kindergarten to high school, we were all in one building. It was tiny.
Yes, I believe
it. We had street dances every year during the summer and on the courthouse lawn, because it was one of those old courthouses, so the lawn went all the way around. We'd have vendors that came in and set up, and we'd have a small band, you know, usually just a local little, you know, group that got together and played. We'd have live music, and we'd all dance, and we'd have these vendors, and it would last all night long, and there'd be fireworks, and just so much fun. Well, the church took over the town and wiped that all out, because dancing was evil, so there was no more dancing. There was no dances at school, either. It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It went to...
That's right.
I moved. I was like, no.
It's fun to visit. It's not good to stay. Like, you know, the nearest McDonald's, I think, was 40 miles away from us. That's a no-no.
Yeah. We had none of that. There was no fast food. We had, take that back. We had, and this may actually, if anybody listens and knows what I'm talking about, which I highly doubt, we had the Bearcat Lounge.
Wow.
And yeah, it was directly across from the school, and it was a bunch of moms who ran it. So the kids could go there during lunch and get hamburgers and whatnot that wouldn't be served in the cafeteria. But it was open to anybody, so you could go there and get food. And that's where all the farmers went in the mornings for their coffee and all this other fun stuff before they started their day.
That is hot.
Yes.
I gotta say, okay, I'm not a country girl. I can stomach it for about 3 months before, and that's even pushing it. Before I was like, I gotta go. There is no McDonald's. There is no shoe shopping here. There's no. I gotta go.
Yeah.
I cannot stay. And there's no GameStop. Okay. Are you with me?
Yeah. Definitely no GameStop.
And they have no high speed internet. It is all DSL.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
not,
torture.
It's not really all that much fun. Everybody's like, oh, that sounds so much... No, it's not. It's not... All right, I know Footloose makes it look like it's so much fun. No, it's really, it's not.
Footloose is a nicer version. Yeah, being in Madeline.
Yeah.
And in the town my family's from, most everybody's related to somebody. So imagine being a teenage girl and I can't date. You know, you get your little summer fling on when you're a teenager if you're out of town.
Yeah.
No. The last time, I think I was 15, and my mom, I came home, and I was like, oh, we went over to so-and-so. We went over to the Piggly Wiggly. Y'all have heard us talk about Piggly Wiggly before. We went over to the Piggly Wiggly, and there was a guy there. He was so cute. She's like, what's his name? I said his name. She's like, oh, that's your cousin.
Man, see, that would suck. Thankfully, I did not have that. My family was new to the area, so I didn't have to worry about any of that.
Oh, no, that's horrible. Anyway.
Now you get up here where I'm living now, and I know I have cousins that are running around in this town, so it's a good thing that, you know, I have somebody I'm with. I don't have to worry about that.
You're safe. Yeah, I go home, and I have to just, it's not really home. I was born here in Houston, but still, we call it home. Yeah, I can't talk to or flirt with anybody because everybody is your cousin. And then my mother always lays out this whole family tree. Well, it's sister, auntie so-and-so, sister's son's child, and then they got married, and then they had a child, and then no.
Yeah.
All right, we need to get onto some news. People are like, this is supposed to be gamer news, and we're hearing about family stuff. We like to give you some interesting sidebars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of interesting, this doesn't exactly have to do with gaming, but Corey, did you see this? The zombie thing has started.
What?
Naked man eats the face of a victim in a horror attack.
Yes, I heard that this morning and I was, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, the short story is, I'm actually pulling this from a UK website, so they're even talking about it over there. a naked homeless man ate another man's face while high on a new potent form of LSD. Rudy Eugene, 31. Which I have a picture of, and I guess I'll Twitter this in a minute. Tweet this. Anyways, was shot dead in Miami, Florida yesterday following the horrific attack where he ripped pieces of flesh from the face of his victim. So from what I was reading, people actually tried to stop the man, but he would growl at them. So they continued to allow him to attack this man. The police showed up, tried to get him to stop. He growled at them and kind of attacked them, went back to eating the man. They shot him, and he just got more violent. They shoot him two or three more times to kill this man.
Oh, my God. He really was a zombie.
Yeah. Seriously, zombie attack, people. It has started. Are you ready? Remember what we've told you?
We told you that's
how
it's going to
start. Don't have to run faster than anybody. You just have to have better aim.
Like Ginger, right. Just shoot him in the leg. Or if you've seen The Walking Dead, shoot him in the leg like Shane.
Yes, exactly.
And make sure you take the gun.
Two stories.
Look, make sure you take the gun after you shoot him.
Exactly. Exactly, people. So just remember, if we love you and if you're bit, I'm going to shoot you in the head.
Oh, there will be no hesitation. You are going down.
It doesn't mean that I don't like you. It just means I love you that much that I'll put you out of your misery. Mm-hmm. And if I hate you when you've been shot, well, I'm just going to put a couple extra rounds in you first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll aim for the head. So I'm going to, you know.
No, I'll put a couple of rounds in you and leave you there so that the zombies can go ahead and have lunch while you run. There you go.
Okay, yeah.
Look, we're coming up with plans. Y'all better be afraid.
Be afraid, people. Be afraid.
Well, you heard me... tell you, you heard or you saw me tweet just a short while ago something about flames, and you're like, what the hell is flames? What are the flames? Well, According to a story up on MSN this morning, security experts have discovered a highly sophisticated computer virus in Iran and other Middle East countries that they believe was deployed at least 5 years ago to engage in state-sponsored cyber espionage. That's right, evidence suggests that the virus, dubbed Flame, may have been built on behalf of the same nation or nations that commissioned the Stuxnet worm that attacked Iran's nuclear program in 2010. According to Kaspersky Lab, the Russian cybersecurity software maker that claimed responsibility for discovering the virus, Kaspersky researchers said on Monday they have yet to determine whether Flame had a specific mission like Stuxnet and declined to say who they think built it. Iran has, of course, accused us here in the U.S. and Israel of deploying Stuxnet. Cybersecurity experts said the discovery publicly demonstrates what experts privy to classified information have long known, that nations have been using pieces of malicious computer code as weapons to promote their security interests for several years now. Alexander Klimberg, who's a cybersecurity expert at the Austrian Institute for Internal Affairs, says that this is one of many, many campaigns that happen all the time and never make it to public domain. A cybersecurity agency in Iran said on its English website that Flame bore a close relation to Stuxnet, the notorious computer worm that attacked that country's nuclear program back in 2010 and is the first publicly known example of a cyber weapon. Iran's National Computer Emergency Response Team also said Flame might be linked to recent cyber attacks that officials in Tehran have said were responsible for massive data losses on some Iranian computer systems. Kaspersky Lab said it discovered Flame after a UN telecommunications agency asked it to analyze data on malicious software across the Middle East in search of data wiping, the data wiping virus reported by Iran. The Stuxnet connection is again being brought by the experts at Kaspersky and Hungary's Laboratory of Cryptography and System Security, who have spent weeks studying Flame, said they have yet to find any evidence that it can attack infrastructure, delete data, or inflict other physical damage. Yet they said they are in the early stages of their investigations, and they may discover other purposes beyond data theft. It took researchers months to determine the key mysteries behind Stuxnet, including the purpose of modules used to attack a uranium enrichment facility in Natanz, Iran. Their initial research suggests that this was probably written by the authors of Stuxnet for covert intelligence collection. This is what John Bumgardner, who's a cyber warfare expert with a nonprofit U.S. Cyber Consensus Unit think tank, said. Flame appears poised to go down in history as the third major cyber weapon uncovered after Stuxnet and its data-stealing cousin, Dooku, named after the Star Wars villain. Yes. Wow. The Moscow-based company is controlled by Russian malware researcher Eugene Kaspersky. It gained notoriety after solving several mysteries surrounding Stuxnet and Dooku. The research shows the largest number of infected machines are in Iran, followed by Israel and the Palestinian territories, then Sudan and Syria. The virus contains about 20 times as much code as Stuxnet, which caused centrifuges to fail at the Iranian enrichment facility it attacked. It also has 100 times as much code as typical virus designed to steal financial information, said Kaspersky Lab senior researcher Raoul, I'm going to ruin your name, Schauenberg. Yeah. Anyway, this story is really, really long. The reason why I'm bringing it to the forefront is so many of you, when we talk here about conspiracies and what we think is going on, and you all are like, that's so far-fetched, it's so movie-esque, guess what? We are living in the future. It is not far-fetched. It is not movie-esque. This is actually happening, and you all need to be aware because they may just be going after, you know, big people now, but eventually, yeah, it's going to filter down to smaller people, smaller things. Those of you who have businesses, I am going to say in about 10 to 15 years, it's not going to be above somebody who's your competition to hire somebody to go after your data. That's how it's going to happen. You may make cupcakes and you have a secret recipe you have stored on your server, and your competition is like, oh, they're selling these cupcakes like hotcakes. Yes, I said it. And then the next thing you know, they have your recipe and they're stealing your customers. This is how it's going to go, and you all need to be aware. Even when I did the thing with the Girl Scouts, these women and little girls were amazed when I was telling them things about Anonymous and things that people can do with your computer. It's amazing to me how many people think that they're safe. They store things on their phones, their laptops, their computers, and they don't encrypt them. They don't have any type of software. And I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of Kaspersky. I find it really odd that they're the ones suddenly finding all of this stuff. Don't you, Ginger?
Just a little bit, yeah. It's totally a... I don't want to think about this.
Yeah, there are several other virus protection, you know, virus protections out there, McAfee, Norton's, which I don't like them that much either.
No, Norton's is a virus all on its own, and if you have that on your computer, you might as well just kiss it goodbye.
Yeah, because it's going to die eventually.
Yeah.
But the thing is, why are they not finding them? They've been around a long time. They, you know, are, from what I hear, are good. I try to steer clear of them. But
No, Norton's is crap. My mom, if you're listening, I love you. She keeps putting Norton's on her computer. I don't know why. I guess because she can get it free or something. And it's crap. Every time I go over there, she complains to me, my computer's running slow, da-da-da-da-da's going on. I go in, I start up micro-trend the house call and clear out all kinds of crap. And tell her, stop using this. Get you an actual antivirus. This is crap. Never listen. The people who are using this, it's your own damn fault. Your computer sucks.
It's... I don't even know what to say. This stuff like this here actually scares me. And the fact that, we don't yet have a major news network. Again, we would like to be that network for you all. Make sure you tell your friends to come listen. Because we need somebody to share these things. Because not only are, you know, is our community, you know, not in the know, nobody's in the know.
There's a whole generation of you folk. That are just, especially like people who are my parents' age, mm-hmm. seem to want to go with the antivirus that was on the store-bought system that they got. And usually they do come with some sort of antivirus on them when you buy them. Usually it's going to be McAfee. There mm-hmm. we go. Or Norton's. And they're crap. And then they wonder, you know, they're like, well, you know, I only browse the internet. I only read my news. I only play these games on Facebook. How is it that I get these viruses, these cookies, these other things? They're everywhere, people. They really are. It doesn't matter if you hide out in your corner of the internet. They are everywhere.
That is why I am moving for some type of a license for people to be on the internet. Not to say they want your information, but you need to know how to protect yourself, how to look for things, and we just have a whole, as Ginger said, a whole generational gap of people who are on the internet who have no idea how it works, how to protect themselves, what not to be sharing. Just because a screen popped up and said, hi there, can I get your account information, does not mean it's your bank.
I know, my mom, I love her. I was talking to her the other day. She's like, yeah, and I downloaded this cool little widget. I can put in all my credit card information, and it remembers it. So it's safe and secure. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Tell me you didn't actually do that. I was like, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, see, very afraid. Some of you people don't need to be on the internet. Sorry.
No. All right, so what have we got? Demon Souls server to stay online indefinitely.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh. I'm pulling this from GamePolitics.com. Atlus USA delivered some great news to fans of its ultra-popular online-focused RPG.
Yes, you have to say the ultra.
Ultra-popular. Mm-hmm. Demon Souls. All right, so the game servers will not go offline. On April 12th, Atlus had announced that it would be shutting the online servers down for the PS3 game on May 31st. But today, a tweet from the company's official Twitter account, at Atlus USA, revealed some great news. Demon's Souls Online will continue for the foreseeable future. Get your copy today and discover the online experience. For those who already own the game and want to continue playing, they no longer have to worry about running out of time, and those who have not tried the game can do so as well. So, yay! Because I know how heartbreaking it is when your favorite game, no matter how old it is, goes offline. I hate that.
Okay, just a quick side note. Remember that game? Did you ever play that game, You Don't Know Jack?
I think so, yeah.
It's now on Facebook. Some of you, I'm going to just eat up. Rawr. I'm coming after you. I am the queen of useless trivia. I'm just saying.
Yeah?
Yes. All right. Well, here's some interesting things that happened. Last night, GameStop apparently rolled out their Android tablets to 1,600 stores here in the U.S. According to GI.biz this morning, Acer, Asus, and Toshiba devices are going nationwide, so following a very successful soft launch. GameStop has rolled out its own line, we did tell you it was coming, of Android tablets to more than 1,600 stores. The retail giant unveiled its line of branded devices last year and began with a soft launch at 200 stores last November. Evidently, the trial period was a success, and the tablets are now available in the majority of the company's American stores. The GameStop tablet line includes the Acer Iconia Tab A200, the Asus TF300T, and the Toshiba Excite 10. Each one is preloaded with Dead Space, Reload, Sonic CD, Monster Madness, Riptide and QWERTY, the Kongregate Arcade app, and a free copy of the Game Informer's digital edition. GameStop intends to introduce a streaming service for the tablet devices and a controller to encourage developers to develop and port more immersive games for the devices. GameStop president Tony Bartle told GI.biz last year that the thought is that the tablet is a great immersive gaming device, so it's hard for us to envision how that tablet will really function without some sort of controller. He said, so we've created a controller that we're testing to really allow for immersive gameplay. It's hard to imagine how to stream a game, let's say Modern Warfare 3, onto a tablet and then play it with your fingers. Not just that, you forgot about the whole factor of having to look down into the tablet. How are you going to hold it and the controller? Come on, GameStop.
That's a very good question. That's a very good question.
That you have not explained. I want to know how much they are. Maybe we'll, not maybe, I am actually going to look it up during the show while they're just talking. So we'll get back to you with a price point of this tablet. Maybe you're interested in having one. Not so much. Oh, look at that. I found it already. Look at that. Just a little bit more than an iPad.
Around, not bad, I guess.
Around $299, $229?
Mm-hmm.
$229, or maybe depending on which iPad you have. Some of them are around $300. So somewhere in that neighborhood. I lie. Okay, there's a cheap one that's available for $229, and that's a 7-inch tablet, and it's an Android. Now, the rest of them are ranging from that price all the way up to $499.
Ooh.
And this the $499 one, one of them is marked down from $509. It's an iPad R. Nope, I'm sorry, that's just an iPad. This theirs is $499, and it's 32 gigabytes of space. Y'all, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know about this one. I don't see that it comes with any kind of a stand. It does come with your games. Okay, let's see. Yep, it's just telling you what it comes with. It doesn't say that it comes with anything else. It has ice cream sandwich on it. It's got an NVIDIA.
I'm so upset about that.
It has a camera. It has a mic. It's, you know, pretty much all the standard fare that the iPad has. It has 12 hours of battery life. 18 hours pad with dock. And again, it does not come with anything that's going to, yeah. It doesn't come with anything. It's got good reviews. Some people are complaining. One has gave it a 3 out of 10, saying it's, yeah. These are new reviews. They're not over a year old. The GPS apparently has some issues. Looking down the list, ooh, the disappointed are bad. Oh, Wi-Fi problems, disconnects in the middle of chat, kind of slow. Yeah, this is their first one, guys, and it's not going to be good. I'm just going to tell you now. It's not going to be fantastic. Again, I would like to say, I don't see a way for it to sit up. I don't see anything in the package that says you're going to be able to prop this up and play. And I'm still trying to figure out why I would get this to prop up and play. I got a computer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And see, that's still so many of these handheld, I don't even know what to call them, tablets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even just a tablet PC. So why would you do that if you can have a regular computer for cheaper and that does more? I mean, I understand taking it with you maybe if you really are that busy, but for most people, for the average person, what do you need this for?
There's no need. I don't see a purpose in, at least not for the type of gaming they're trying to do. Here's where I can see it works for us here. If we're traveling, we're doing conventions and things, we may have something we need to work on. It's good that you don't have to bring the whole computer. For us, drop it in your purse and you go.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I don't see, as you say, the average person who's not really a gamer, you're not a doctor, because I see there's practical applications for being in the medical field. even some musicians to take to practice. But what I don't see here is a way to sit it up. It's going to lie down on something, which makes it vulnerable to all kinds of stuff spilling on it, you sitting down on it because the person is less likely to see something laying flat, you know, before they sit down, stepping on it if somebody leaves it on the floor. This is all stuff that I see. And I don't see a stand or anything that it comes with. It's just, we're going to give you a controller. But if I'm playing Modern Warfare, I don't want to be looking down into the screen. I want comfort. So GameStop, if you listen, you might want to explain this. You got some explaining to do. We don't understand how this is going to work.
You've got some explaining to do.
Lots of explaining. And the price is astronomical. We've been talking about in the news. They have a PC now that you can buy for $99. That little
Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and it is so powerful. It is infinitely powerful. Oh wow! Than anything, some big computers. I'm like, I want to get one. I can afford that.
Exactly. $99. I could totally do that.
Power.
Yes. All right. So what have we got? Square Enix says Activision was crazy to abandon True Crime Hong Kong. GamePolitics.com, this actually came out a couple of days ago, but I'm just getting it to you now. Sorry, folks. In an interview with Games Beat, Square Enix's Mike Fisher says that Activision was crazy when it made the decision to abandon True Crime Hong Kong. Mike Fisher is the president and chief executive of the U.S. division of Square Enix, who also happens to own Eidos. Eidos? Anyways, here's what he had to say about it. Fisher says, the game was, in a sense, discovered. I'm making air quotes, discovered by the folks in Wimbledon. The minute they showed it to us, we really felt like we had found a diamond in the rough. Obviously, the game was originally True Crime Hong Kong from Activision. I can't speak to why they let it go. I'm not going to speculate on their behalf. All I know is they've got to be crazy because the game is just fantastic. The scale and scope of the game really encompasses all of everything you'd want to do in Hong Kong. The acting, the story, the characters are very deep. There's clearly a lot of inspiration from the movies, The Departed and Infernal Affairs. You play an undercover cop who starts to feel mixed loyalties. But the open world feels like Arkham City. The combat feels as good as a fighting game, the driving is as good as Need for Speed, and the story is every bit as rich and as compelling as Mass Effect, all in one game. In a sense, it reminds me a little bit of Dead Island, which Square Enix America did sales and distribution for. Nobody had heard of that game coming into E3, and in the U.S. alone, it sold over 2 million units. It's great to have a sleeper. I've never played this. Did you play this?
True Crime, no, I kept hearing stuff about it, but like I said, there's only so many hours in a day.
Yeah, true story.
We try. Oh, wow. Oof.
I know, and I meant to spend my hours yesterday blowing stuff up, but then storm and, sleep and...
Okay. Yes, exactly.
Sandman came in and like totally stabbed me from behind.
You know what, I'm going to let that go.
Oh, wow. For once, I did not mean something dirty and cheap today. Nice. See? She's the one who corrupted me.
It's better that than the other thing I was before the show. Okay. Okay, according to Mashable Business this morning, Google has officially bought Motorola Mobility. Now, this actually happened a few days ago, but, the word is getting around. Motorola Mobility is now officially a part of Google. CEO Larry Page, who we think is the hottie with a body, announced Tuesday the search giant had closed a deal to acquire the cell phone manufacturer, also revealing that Motorola CEO Sanjay Jha would be stepping down. Ooh, you're fired. In a blog post, Page said that the new CEO is longtime Googler Dennis Woodside. Page says Woodside, an Ironman triathlete, is... Really? Does that need to be figured into his job? Look, after I call somebody a hottie with a body, but still, did that need to be a part of the story? Anyway... said he's largely responsible for building Google's presence overseas, especially in the Middle East, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Russia. He has served as Google's president of the Americas for the past 3 years and played a role in increasing Google's revenue from $10.8 million to $17.5 billion over the period that he's been there. After Google announced its bid to acquire Motorola Mobility last August, the deal was met with surprise and confusion, since Google had previously been content to be the steward of the Android mobile platform, but to keep out of the hardware business. I see a fight here. I'm going to tell you where I see it. Oh, my God, it's going to be so good. Okay, so the acquisition made more sense as a purchase of Motorola's extensive intellectual property, including some patents fundamental to how internet communication works. Google, as a relatively young company, had a far weaker IP portfolio. How Motorola's hardware business will be integrated into Google's operations is still an unanswered question, but there have been rumors that Google is planning to begin selling more Android devices directly to consumers as opposed to selling them through carrier partners. However, to avoid showing favoritism, Google is said to be planning to partner with several device manufacturers. Look out, Apple. Okay, Motorola also announced that it was split into two companies in 2008, creating Motorola Mobility, a mobile communications company focused on consumers, and Motorola Solutions, a telecommunications equipment provider. The plan went into effect January of 2011, about 8 months before Google announced the deal to buy Motorola Mobility for $12.5 billion. Here is the fight. Remember, we told you last week there are rumblings that Facebook wants to make phones. As we all know, Google and Facebook have a rivalry. Ooh, it is so delicious.
Is it an actual rivalry? I mean, come on. It's Google
True.
And Facebook. Facebook's like way down here. You got Google way the hell up there.
Well, Facebook likes to think.
Facebook likes to think a lot of things.
Yeah, as we said, you guys are a beefed up AOL from 1998. But
put in the grave.
Yeah, whereas Google is, yeah. Hang on, I just got something from the people's at Women Gamers. I suppose I need to share that with you all. There's a scholarship opportunity. Opportunity.
Oh, yay.
It's a scholarship opportunity. I cannot find it. I scrolled. Why do I scroll?
I don't know, but we both know not to do it, but we do it anyways. We are that talented.
We are usually extremely talented. We usually can hold it down. But... Okay, now I've got it. Okay, quickly, because I'm going to steal Ginger's thunder real quick. There is a scholarship announced for students that wanting to pursue interactive media degrees up in Seattle, Washington. If you've never been to Seattle, go. You will adore it. It's nice. It's from Washington Interactive Network and Enterprises Seattle. It's going to be two $10,000 scholarships that will be awarded to women or minorities pursuing undergraduate or graduate degrees in interactive media, also development, computer science and engineering, game design, and digital art and animation. Deadlines for your application, very, very short. You have to have it in by June 22nd. I will make sure I tweet that to you guys or retweet it. I am so excited. That's nice.
That is awesome.
Ginger, we should apply. You think they'd let us?
I don't know. It's what I was just thinking. I was thinking, you know, I am planning on going back, and I plan on starting in January, so.
Right?
All right. So what have we got? Next Guild Wars, next Guild Wars 2 beta weekend events announced. Second public beta weekend event for Guild Wars 2, Friday, June 8th, and through Monday, June 11th of 2012. Of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
NCSoft and ArenaNet, the developers of Guild Wars 2, are thrilled to announce the second public beta weekend event for Guild Wars 2 from 2100 CEST, Friday, June 8th until 8:59 CEST, Monday, the 11th of June. Hundreds of thousands of fans who have pre-purchased Guild Wars 2 will have another chance to explore the world of Tyria. By the way, we so need in this. ArenaNet's lead producer, Chris Whiteside, provides further information on the ArenaNet blog, including that existing characters have not been deleted, and you will be able to continue right where you left off. The only way players can guarantee access to all Guild Wars 2 beta weekend events is to pre-purchase the Guild Wars 2 Collectors Digital Deluxe or Standard Digital Editions. In addition to access to our beta weekend events, players will receive 3-day Head Start access prior to launch and the exclusive Heroes Band in-game item. Pre-purchase is available at buy.guildwars2.com or from selected retailers. They say in the coming days, eligible players should look for an email coming from NCSoft with additional information on how to download the client and additional account registration information. So watch your emails, folks, and make sure you're getting legitimate links. We know how this goes right before betas.
Yeah, because, we don't want you caught. You don't want to get any flame on your PC.
Yeah, I've gotten another beta invite to Mr. Pandaria, and it's like, I know you're fake. Stop sending them to me. I know it.
Well, Sony has gotten a bit of fresh air.
And,
Yeah. Do you know the, what's the symbol for oxygen? O2?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the O2 will become home to a PlayStation certified gaming zone thanks to a new partnership between the London venue called O2 and Sony. As Sony's official screen partner, Sony will supply 280 Bravia televisions to the venue as well as PlayStations and Vitas to visitors to the O2 so they can get their hands on the consoles. The official screen partnership with the O2 represents a true Sony United showcase of our technology, content, and brand experiences, and a platform via which Sony's full entertainment proposition can be most effectively demonstrated to their customers. This is from Sony's GM of Brand and Consumer Marketing, Mark Kumb. Sony's connected devices offer a much richer experience for our customers, and combined with some of the best content available, the experience also looks and sounds better than ever before. The O2 sees around 8 million visitors a year and features an indoor arena, exhibition space, a club, and a cinema. Sony Music and Sony Pictures will also contribute content. Wow. There are obvious synergies between a global entertainment brand like Sony and an internationally recognized music and entertainment venue like O2, so we're delighted that we have been able to form this partnership. That's from the SVP of Europe for AEG Global Partnerships, Paul Samuels. At the O2, we're always looking for ways to improve and enhance the visitor's experience, and Sony's proposition will provide the O2 with a state-of-the-art audio-visual technology and a unique fan interaction experience. I think this is brilliant of you, Sony. We told you could do it. Well, it's brilliant because once you put something in someone's hands, and we're not talking about you go to the store and you play the Vita or the DS there, that does sometimes have an impact on you too. But you can actually take one yourself, walk in and walk around, sit down and actually play with it without somebody bothering you. Can I help you today? No, leave me alone. Trying to play Drake's Fortune. Thank you. So, yeah, that makes you want one, and then you start going out and selling crack, I mean, games or whatever you want to call it, so you can get one. It's a brilliant idea. I have to say, when I went to Best Buy and they let me play with the Vita, of course they didn't, you know, let me out of eyesight. They actually let me hold one, you know, they got it down and took it out of the box, not connected to the wall. You know how they have it strapped to the wall. And I felt that tingly, you gamers know what I'm talking about, that tingly thing where you're like, oh God, I think I want this.
I want it.
Why do I want it? Is this too fragile? But it is beautiful. I'm not a graphics person. I'm usually about gameplay, but it really was a beautiful, beautiful machine. I wanted to put it in my bra and just kind of ease on out of the store or dare anybody to take it out. See, that's where we have over you guys with the fluffy cakes. I put something in the bra in the store, and they're like, you have to take that out, ma'am. Try to take it out. Go ahead, try. Then you start screaming, ah, help! And attack help.
He touched my boob!
Yes. And then you run out of the store, bam, PlayStation Vita in your hands. See?
Exactly.
We're teaching them wrong things.
Totally are. All right, so 38 Studios speaks out against Rhode Island governor's public comments. Wow. All right, so a number of stories have popped up over the holiday weekend relating to 38 Studios and its continuing struggle to stay alive. I'd like to say, who is staying? I thought they fired everybody. All right, so anyways, among them is news that an update to Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning will not see the light of day, that a sequel to the game that was already in pre-production and fresh comments from several high-profile 38 Studios executives taking Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee to task for throwing the company under the bus in the name of what they see as demagoguery.
Mm.
All right, that's a new word. I'm going to look that up later. First up is a joystick story in which founder Kurt Schilling says that he invested $50 million of his own money in the company, which he stands to lose if it fails. The former All-Star Red Sox pitcher said that he was frustrated with the actions of the state's governor, who seems to have gone out of his way to ruin any chances of the company getting private investment with his public comments on the situation. Schilling called Chafee's public comments on the company's situation devastating, adding that it scared off private investors. 38 Studios subsidiary Big Huge Games also reportedly working on a sequel to Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. That project was going to rely on an estimated private investment of $35 million from an unnamed publisher to go into production. Schilling said that Chaffee's statements ruined that deal. Polygon also has comments from former 38 Studios creative director Steve Deniser, who told NECN in an interview that the Rhode Island governor turned his back on the studio in their time of need. We just needed a little more help, and we thought the state would have our backs on that. We thought the governor was an ally. It didn't turn out that way. Deniser served as the creative lead on 38 Studios' role-playing game Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. The governor has turned his back on a lot of taxpaying Rhode Island citizens who work here, and it's unfortunate that we had a lot of great people who wanted to contribute to Rhode Island, and now they can't. Deniser went on to say that he has a few questions for Governor Chaffee. Why did you do it? Why didn't you help us? He, the governor, said a lot of things. He's broken confidentiality. He's done a lot of things to materially hurt us, and I don't understand it. Finally, Polygon reports that a planned update for Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning has been postponed indefinitely. Obviously, with no one currently working for big, huge games, it would be tough for the company to provide any support at this point. No kidding, right? Lead designer Ian S. Fraser said that they had received clearance to begin development on a PC-only patch with plans to include two additional difficulty modes, camera features, and bug fixes, but then the layoffs occurred. He says, "I wanted to apologize for the lack of a patch for Reckoning. It's something we very much wanted to do, but various issues outside our control, which unfortunately I'm not at liberty to discuss, prevented us from doing so for a long time." Wow, this is just going to get messy.
Yeah, and I have to say, I played Kings of Amalur, and the camera angles are horrible. I mean, absolutely. I wish they had gotten to fix it, because it looks like it's a good game, but I couldn't. That was just, the camera's just all over the place. Can you stop swinging all around? Oh, it was not cute.
No, but, you know, they're kind of right. Governor, I do remember reading this sometime last week, the governor talking out of turn, saying things he probably shouldn't. So maybe they can go back and sue?
I don't know. Depends on what he said. I mean, I'm sure a good lawyer can find a way around it either way you go.
Yeah.
But, yeah. What was I? I have lost my story completely. How about that? Oh, okay. Oh, I found it. Whew. Okay, so got a story coming from across the pond. According to BBC News, thousands of UK websites are now in breach of a law that dictates what they can log about visitors. Yes, European laws that defined what details sites can record in text files called cookies came into force on May 26th. Cookies were widely used to customize what repeat visitors see on a site and by advertisers to track users online. The Information Commissioner's Office, also known as the ICO, said it would offer help to non-compliant sites rather than take legal action against them. The regulations say websites must get informed consent from users before they record any detailed information in the cookies they store on visitors' computers. Among websites that have complied with the law, getting consent has involved a pop-up box that explains the changes. Users are then asked to click to consent to having information recorded and told what will happen if they refuse. UK firms have had 12 months to prepare for the change, and the ICO has spent much of the time reminding businesses about their obligations. The ICO has also updated its policy to allow organizations to use implied consent to comply. This means users do not have to make an explicit choice. Instead, their continued use of a site would taken to mean that they are happy for the information to be gathered. Ooh, people, that's why we say read the fine print. However, it was a concern for the ICO that so many sites were not yet compliant. This is from Dave Evans, who's the group manager at ICO, who has led its work on cookies in the last 18 months. However, he added it was not necessarily easy for companies to comply with the laws because of the amount of work it involved. On busy sites, he said, an audit of current cookie practices could take time because of the sheer number of cookie files they regularly share, regularly issue and monitor and update. Mr. Evans said ICO was expecting sites that were not compliant to be able to demonstrate what work they had done in the last year to get ready. Fines for non-compliance were likely to be levied, he said, because there was little risk that a non-compliant site would cause a serious breach of data protection laws that was likely to cause substantial damage and distress to the user. It was planned planned that they would use formal undertakings or enforcement notices to make sites take action. He said those are setting out the steps we think they need to take in order to become compliant and when we expect them to be taking these steps. If they comply with one of these notices or signs, one of those undertakings, they're committing to doing this properly, and that's the main point. As well as advising firms, the ICO has also issued guidance to the public that explains what cookies are, how to change cookie settings, and how to complain if they are not, if they are worried about a site's policies. I like that they're explaining to people what it is, because we don't do that here. We just kind of let them on the internet, and they don't know. I got cookies.
They're not of the chocolate chip variety, so they're not good, okay?
Lovely. This is going to happen here more than likely.
And they probably should. I mean, for as many as I clean off my computer every time I turn around, they're going to have to do something, because there's a lot of information that's being stored and being used that really shouldn't.
This is true. Some things we don't want you to see.
Yes. My midget porn is mine, all right, people? Stay away from my midget porn.
Okay. Ooh. Here, you know what? The people are starting to get ramped up for the E3. Since I've been sitting here, just mail is starting to pour in. Fun.
Yeah. I don't even want to read this one, but I'm going to. Angry Birds debit cards to be issued in Russia.
I'm done.
I know, right? Russian fans, video game Angry Birds will soon be able to get special debit cards or angry cards, giving them discounts on the game's products. Moscow-based, I'm not even going to try to say your name. Promsviazbank said Tuesday it will start issuing the new MasterCards on June 4th. They will be printed with images of the various characters and will give users a 10% discount on all Angry Birds branded products. Besides debit cards, the bank will also issue Angry Birds cash cards, which users top up with money. The bank will pay a 4% annual interest rate on the card's balances. The maker of Angry Birds, Rovio Entertainment, has already launched toys and baby clothes line featuring Angry Birds characters. I kid you not, if I see your kid wearing an Angry Birds shirt, I'm ripping that off its little baby body, okay? You should not torture your kid like that.
No, you cannot rip things off of children.
Fine, I'm going to paint over it.
It's not their fault that they're mommies and daddies.
That is some bad taste, people. Come on. But the Russian debit card is going to be the first Angry Birds branded financial product. The video game has been downloaded more than 10 million times in Russia. Ivan Pyatkov, director for retail sales and technology at Promsvakazbank, told the Associated Press that the bank is planning an initial printing of 50,000 cards, but hopes to issue twice as much by the end of the year. The bank expects the cards to help attract urbanites between 25 and 35 years of age with a monthly income of at least $1,000. Pyatkov said the bank is receiving a large number of requests for Angry Birds cards following early reports in the Russian press. Some clients are demanding their Angry Birds cards right now, before the official launch. Promsvakazbank will be launching the card in partnership with Internet Retail Solutions, Rovio's agent in Russia. I can't talk. All right, so that's
Let it out.
You people, Angry Birds, really?
Well, you know, they got to do their thing, Ginger.
Yeah, I have to do mine of making fun of them and thinking, oh my God, what is your problem?
It's all right.
Your major malfunction.
It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Stop playing with those muddlings.
I am not playing with any mudlings.
You are.
Oh, I was looking at a prototype right now.
A prototype?
Yeah. You want me to read another one? I got another one.
If you would like, because I was going to tell them about Divinity Original Sin. I was trying to make sure I get a nice trailer so they can watch while we talk to them. But you know how it would roll.
Yeah. All right. So in Pop Sci, there's a story that says Pentagon, that fictional drone from the unreleased video game, sure looks cool. Art imitates life, they say. Every now and then, life imitates art, which is only slightly terrifying when the art being imitated is a Call of Duty title and the real-world entity doing the imitating is the Pentagon. A fictional drone from a video game that hasn't even been released yet has inspired a DOD office to consider pursuing the same drone in real life.
Oh, no.
Brookings Institute 21st Century Defense Initiative Director and all-around drones guru Peter Singer tells Initiative News Daily. The video game in question, out on April 23rd, released by Treyarch, the maker of Call of Duty Black Ops 2, to drum up viral buzz about its upcoming game title. In it, a gentleman in a heavy Russian accent shows off a tablet-controlled machine gun packing quadrorotor drone, a drone that, by the way, does not exist outside of the pixelated landscape of the video game set in 2025, but it could exist, and it is. And if it's going to exist, the Pentagon can't let the Russians get there first. See, nuclear weapons, the moon, the miracle on ice. Oh, God. All right, so, which is interesting, ironic even, considering Black Ops 2, out in November, seems to be nothing if not a violent warning against automating the means of warfare. If this is where the Pentagon is mining ideas, then it's certainly going to get some cool machines. But here's hoping it's going to keep its network security up to date. Oh, my God. So there is a video, and if you want to see it, you know what? It's on YouTube, so I'm going to Twitter it. So check out my Twitter.
Oh, check out her Twitter.
Check out my Twitter, baby.
All right. So now I get to tell you about Divinity Original Sin, because you're probably already watching the trailer, 30-second delay for the win. This is from Larian Studios. They're an indie game developer from Belgium, best known for the critically acclaimed Divine Divinity and Divinity 2 Dragon Knight Saga role-playing games. They have unveiled their newest offering, Divinity Original Sin, a game that offers pretty much everything you could ever want in a role-playing game, they said. It's set for release on the PC and Mac next year. It's supposed to be the next game in the Divinity universe and tells the tale of two unlikely heroes, a condemned warrior released from his chains and a mystic heroine restored to life. Yes, we said woman. Heroin. I didn't mean heroin the drug. Woman. Did Larian make a pact with an unholy entity that vowed to enslave the world if Larian didn't create the game that it so desired to hold it in its hooves? Wow. What are we even talking about? Instead of quotes from executives or hyperbole, I got a quick little list of things you can do. Let me see, because they gave me a fact sheet because they just love us. And guess what? Oh, I lost it. There we go. Okay. So you can play with two lead characters, discover who they are and what terrible truths bind them, enjoy the freedom of a class-free character development system with plenty of unique skills, weapons, and equipment. You can summon and recruit other characters and creatures to complement your party. You can explore a large and dense world filled with quests, special moments, and memorable characters. Discover a wealth of item interaction. If it's not nailed to the ground, it can be moved, used, or combined. Pursue the freedom and explore the depths of role-playing where choices and consequences do, in fact, matter. Now, here's what some of you are not going to like. It is a turn-based combat system. It adds tactical edge and depth to your role-playing experience. You can use skill and spell combos to make your attacks more effective. Make use of the terrain during combat. Exploit the environment to gain the upper hand in battles. It sounds a lot like Gladius, ironically. You can develop in cooperative skills and spells. A party acting as a well-honed team can prevail over superior forces. Experience co-op multiplayer mode. That's right. You can play with your friends. Discover the cooperative dialogue system. You don't necessarily need to agree with each other. So if Ginger and I were playing, if I said yes and she said no, there's no problem with that. You can also, for those of you who love to dabble a little bit in level design and level creation, build your own adventure. They give you the tools. You can create and share your new adventures online. You can enjoy the divine music of Kirill Pokrovsky. He's an award-winning composer of all the previous Divinity games. You can dive into the Divinity universe. The story of Original Sin is the prequel to the events of this of this game. So if you've not played the rest of them, you won't be all lost when you dive in. Right? Good? Yeah.
That is good, yes.
They're saying it's similar to, if you play these games, Fallout 2, Dragon Age, Baldur's Gate, Ultima 7, and of course their own Divine Divinity for PC and Mac. And it is co-op for up to 4 players. If you are on Twitter with us, you are probably watching the trailer or have watched the trailer. Mm-hmm. It's nice, right?
That is very nice. But
I be's impressed.
We like it when you are impressed. I cannot talk today. I don't know what the deal is.
Oh, wait a minute. You can also go over. I'm sorry. I forgot to add. You can go over and check them out on their Facebook or Twitter, which is at, I think it's at. It's how, I don't know what they got here. Go over to DivinityOriginalSin.com and check it out. and let us know if you like it. I don't like the note he left for me at the end. Stop it. Okay.
Oh, yeah?
Sometimes the developers leave crazy stuff at the ends of our emails. Oh, yeah. Oh, we're almost out of time.
We are. We've got 7 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Okay, so last half of Darkness, Society of the Serpent Moon, available from today. Today, video game publisher Iceberg Interactive and game developer WRF Studios announces that the horror adventure game Last Half of Darkness, Society of the Serpent Moon, for the PC, has been released in English-speaking European territories and is available via digital download portals worldwide. Alternatively, you can buy Last Half of Darkness, Society of the Serpent Moon and its predecessor, Tomb of Zodger, in the Iceberg Shop. Accompanying the release of Last Half of Darkness, Society of the Serpent Moon, is the official pack shot. Okay, yeah, y'all care about that. Oh, right. Vampire-like murders are plaguing the dark streets and alleys of the tiny, exotic European town of Antibes. After your fiancé was sent there to write an investigative story, you receive a strange package with a booklet and a mysterious disc. The return address on the package reveals it came from Antibes, and it contains the bloodstained engagement ring you gave her. Your journey follows the path of clues left behind by your missing girlfriend, where along the way, you will have to solve an ancient mystery and the source of evil causing the local townsfolk to turn into a rare breed of savage, night-thirsty murderers. Your plane leaves tonight. Are you ready to once again uncover the secrets behind another chapter of The Last Half of Darkness? All right, so what do we got? A couple of key features. Third-person point-and-click style gameplay, high-resolution full-screen graphics, cinematic movie cutscenes, strange and mysterious puzzles.
Oh, you, GLaDOS has you.
GLaDOS, let me go.
Ooh, she really has you. Okay,
GLaDOS,
I think she
has you in the face.
She let you go. Go ahead.
All right. Creepy and horrifying thriller mystery, dynamic fog and rain effects, tab key enabled hotspot display. All right, so awesome. So if you want to check this out, it is up on iceberg-shop.com. I'm going to have this up on gamermatrix.com in a couple of minutes. Check it out. Do it.
All right. So we still got about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to jump in with this one. Ah, Microsoft says that we are Borg. Resistance is futile. Yes, according to VentureBeat, Microsoft still does not have much to show for its $8.5 billion Skype acquisition, except for a lackluster Windows phone app or Android app if you talk to Ginger. But Tony Bates, the former Skype CEO and now president of Microsoft's Skype division, has at least managed to keep his ship independent of the software giant. He says, "We've kept our identity and our autonomy, other than when they told us to shut the hell up and quit talking." He told us to the New York Times in an interview, Microsoft is the one that told us to shut up about Skype. Did you find that interesting? He says, how so? They kept their identity? Well, he's based out of Silicon Valley. Skype also has offices all over the world. He demanded Skype-specific ID cards for his employees instead of Microsoft cards. And perhaps the most daring, he sports a MacBook Air in his office. Woo, that's hard. Skype now has 250 million users, 26% jump over this last 7 months, according to the New York Times. Bates' demand for freedom is understandable. Microsoft has been known to kill innovation as it absorbs interesting products into its Borg.
Never.
As it absorbs interesting products into its Borg-like corporate culture.
See, neither one of us can talk today. I don't know what to do.
But it is also dangerous, since Skype's true value to Microsoft is the promise of deep integration across all of its many services. Skype is still working on bringing its services to the Xbox 360, though that won't likely happen this year, and Microsoft's business-oriented Link product, among other Microsoft services. It may be tough to see now, but once Microsoft and Skype figure out a way to work together, the video chat service could end up being even more powerful and ubiquitous in our homes. Integration in the Xbox 360 brings Skype to the living room, and it's already available on most smartphones and tablets. But don't be surprised if Microsoft pushes Skype as a standalone service as well, perhaps with more Skype handsets, which could potentially be powered by Windows phones. I got to tell you, Microsoft, There's another thing we talked about yesterday. Anybody out there listening, if you've been noticing you've been having problems with your Wi-Fi on your Xbox, shoot us a tweet or an email, webmaster@gamergirlsradio.com, and let us know. We are wondering if something's going on. This has happened to Ginger, a couple of other people over the weekend, I heard, have been having problems with their Wi-Fi and Xbox Live. I have the same problem. So we would like to establish a pattern. Then we're going to go to Microsoft and say, instead of wasting all your money on Skype, fix it. Fix the Wi-Fi.
No kidding. Skype worked just fine the way it was. There's nothing wrong with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fix it unless it's broke. And your Xbox is broke, or at least mine is. Bastages.
And with that, we shall bid you all a fond adieu. You know where to find us. We'll be on later tonight. Pixinista.
Yes, we will.
I got some stuff I got to talk about. What?
Yeah?
Yes. Pixinista, baby. We'll see y'all later.
I'm in love with you, Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'm in love with you. Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'ma love you so. From your big round bottom to the top of your bow. Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'm in love with you. Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'm in love with you. Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'ma love you so. From your big round bottom to the top of your bow. Miss Pac-Man, baby, I'm in love with you. 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 Hey ho, hey ho, hey ho.
In that maze, I knew you were no ordinary yellow circle.
Baby, I'm in love with you.
Mean, colorful ghosts will try to stop you, but you just keep on eating those dots, because you will always be Miss Pac-Man, and that is why
I love you.
Oh, no.
Ginger.